door, slam shut, and it's on.
That's pretty darn creepy.
Listen, this is gonna sound totally crazy, and I know that, but I'm having this feeling lately that maybe whatever happened to us when we were little, I think it's starting again.
I don't want to talk about this, Christy.
I just remember being scared all the time.
Whatever it was, it thrived on fear. The more we paid attention to it, the worse it got. You need to leave this alone.
Welcome to Now Playing's Paranormal Activity Retrospective Series.
You promised me you weren't going to mess with that stuff.
You cannot run from this. It will follow you.
Hosted by Arnie.
They just about think he's the coolest guy ever.
Jacob.
I know that elders like Jacob can feel kind of intense, but as long as you stick with me, you'll be fine.
And Stuart.
There are these malevolent evil spirits that only exist to cause pain and commit evil for their own amusement.
This podcast will contain harsh language, movie spoilers, and may try to scare you with loud, sudden banging.
And you're not in control. It is in control. And if you think you're in control, then you're being an idiot.
Listener discretion is advised.
You know, we can't just let this affect us that much. If we do that, the terrorists win.
Today we're discussing Paranormal Activity, Next of Kin, starring Emily Bader, Roland Buck III, Dan Lippert, Henry Ayers Brown, directed by William Eubank. This is the Now Playing co-host who's finally almost out of podcasting activity, Arnie.
And Stuart.
And this is the co-host who would eat a human faster than I'd like to admit, Jacob.
Look, I don't know why it took 6 years after Paranormal Activity, the ghost dimension, to come up with this, but it's not because found footage stopped being popular. I just want to say, same year that movie came out, M. Night had a big hit with The Visit, Unfriended, it had a sequel, John Cho had that movie Searching. People were not tired of the gimmick, but maybe people were just tired of seeing suburbanites freak out over slightly ajar doors and being flung around in the dark.
Yeah, I mean, they promised it was the end.
Well, I don't buy that. They looked at what they had and said, this ain't good, and if audiences don't like it, it's the end. But if that thing had made more than $30 million, it wouldn't have been the end. They would have had it out the next year. But they did have something relatively quick, and Arnie, my understanding is you played it. 2017, there was a video game? Check this out, a video game. A Bumps in the Night?
Hey, remember when we reviewed the Grudge series? There was that Grudge video game.
Yeah, I can imagine Grudge having a video game. I can't imagine how you make people walking around a bed excited.
You stand really still so you can hear a faint knock on the wall.
Mm-hmm. For hours.
It's called Paranormal Activity, The Lost Soul, and it's a VR game.
Do you get to go into the ghost dimension and look for a lost soul?
You get to go into a haunted house.
Well, that's fun.
I broke this out on the Oculus. I will say I like the Oculus more than the PlayStation 1, because remember when we played Doom on the VR headset, Stuart, there were all those cables and everything?
Yeah.
Oculus is wireless. So I had no wires, I immersed myself in this world, and I will admit, I had some trepidation. I get a little bit of out of sorts when I go into VR. I just lose my place. I have no idea which way I'm facing, where I am.
Is there footage of you hitting the TV with the controller, breaking it? I've seen those a lot on YouTube.
No, Oculus, you don't even need a TV. It's just wherever you are. And it's got a really good room system. But I was scared to play this game because I'm like, I'm going to enter into their world, and I know shit's going to fly at my face. And I started it the night after we recorded. It was like 1 o'clock in the morning, and I'm going into this VR world, and I'm like, no, I'm too scared of it. So I'm going to save it and do it later. Boy, do I wish I had gotten scared during this game.
You scared yourself more than the game did, it sounds like.
I did. I psyched myself into being scared of the game when this game is the worst thing with the Paranormal Activity name on it.
No.
No matter what I think of any of the movies, this game is so much worse. First of all, they've completely abandoned the found footage premise. I mean, how do you make a game in found footage?
I think that's a win. That doesn't sound like a problem. That sounds like, oh, you're there. Why would I need to hide behind a camera? I'm there.
True. But it's not like I'm a character carrying around a camera. To me, Paranormal Activity, what makes it Paranormal Activity is the found footage style. So you take that away, and instantly I feel like I'm in a much more generic ghost story.
So there's no camera involved, because I know there's a series that my wife really loves called Fatal Frame, which is, yeah, you're going into haunted houses and you're using a camera to, like, scare ghosts away or something. That's how you capture their souls. Sounds like a great setup for a Paranormal Activity game, but no, no camcorder even in this one as a weapon.
There's security cameras in the house you're exploring, and, like, maybe three times you walk into a room that has a television, the TV turns itself on and shows you something happening in a different room. Usually it's a Paranormal Activity scare level, like a chair moves on its own or something. Nothing major.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is as close as you get to having the found footage. But the game's biggest flaw is its mechanics. First of all, because I think it's in VR or something, its graphics are straight out of 1997 PlayStation 1. I walk up to a plant and I look at it sideways and it's flat and all the holes in the ground and everything has angles like the old Tomb Raider game. Remember, like, Tomb Raider 1, everything was so goddamn angular.
Were there girl ghosts with, like, sharp angular boobs chasing you?
No boobs, but the girl person around did have polygonal face. I mean, it was bad.
Wow.
That's not a problem for me. Again, everything you're saying is, I guess I can see why some wouldn't like it, but Tomb Raider was the last video game I played on my own, so I have some love for that. If you're telling me this is a VR experience with retro Minecraft graphics and I'm going into a haunted house, so far so good.
Okay, the next thing is, because it's VR, the interface. The hardest thing to do in this game is open a fucking door.
Okay, no, I hate those. Yes, I remember even in the Grudge game, that was like sometimes you would get trapped because you couldn't figure out how to turn around or something. Like, that's never how you want to spend your energy.
This is, you reach out with your hand and you grab the doorknob and that works. And then you have to like rotate your wrist and then pull it, but you can't actually use your feet. So you're like trying to shimmy in the crack of the door, and half the time the door would slam shut on me again. And then what's the game? The game is you're in this house, and you're basically, I have no idea who I am as the main character. I don't know why I'm in this house at night. I don't know why I found a decrepit house that has a letter from a realtor that says, let us know when you're ready to get it back on the market. I've hid the key. And so now I'm sneaking around trying to find a key with a flashlight that's going to constantly run out of batteries if I don't do stuff fast enough. I get in the house and I'm wondering if they were trying for Myst or something like that, a puzzle game, but you're basically wandering around aimlessly around this big house looking for stuff, like artifacts that you'll need for an end ritual, and then you need keys to unlock doors to get the artifacts. But you finally get a key, and then you have to go to like a dozen different locked doors to figure out, is this the key for this door? Nope. Go to the next door. Key for this door? Nope. And when the doors are locked, you can't even grip their handle, and you can't put the keys in the wrong lock. So I'm standing there like, am I not putting the key in the right place in the VR world so that the key isn't going in the lock? Or is the key not for the lock? I'm half the time wondering, is it the interface, or do I need to keep looking for a different lock?
Okay, yeah, I would be irritated by that. But I'm curious, like, you haven't said anything about Katie or Hunter or Toby?
Oh, there's none of that shit. No.
Okay. No Toby.
No.
So they just bought some, like, horror game property and called it Paranormal Activity, it sounds like.
There we go.
It feels that way. Most of the game, there is a little girl who runs out and is like, they're after me, and runs back away. But most of the game, you're searching through drawers. And here's something frustrating. You're at a cabinet of drawers, right? There's 12 drawers in this cabinet. Only 4 open, but they all look identical. And there's not even something always in the 4 that open. So again, I'm pulling at drawers like, is it my interface? Or does this drawer just not open? And I imagine this game is what parenthood feels like. I'm wandering around a big house looking for keys while a child every so often comes out and shouts at me.
Yeah, that's more or less right.
But eventually, you can get to a point in the game. I played this game for about 3 hours of abject frustration. And I was getting pretty close to the end. And I decided this is not where I wanted to spend my energy at all. And they finally made it so you don't have to have the VR set to play. You can play it on Windows with a mouse. And I watched a YouTube video where somebody did this. They beat the game in 27 minutes. When you're clicking and you don't have to wonder, am I grabbing the right thing? You can beat this game in nothing flat. And so I watched the ending. You're going through, there's a little girl who's running scared. Her grandmother's dying in the place, holding a crucifix. Half the time when things were supposed to scare me, I just wasn't looking the right way. Like, I had to get the crucifix from the grandmother. I take the crucifix, I'm looking at the crucifix. The grandmother pops up and goes, "Ah!" I'm like, what happened? Oh, I heard a sound. Oh, grandma fell over.
I don't know. That kind of replicates watching Paranormal Activity. Like, did I hear a noise or not? Like,
yeah.
So you go around and this woman who is, I think is the girl's mother, is boarding up the house and she is performing a ritual that will raise a demon. And if this woman sees you the first time you see her, she'll kill you. But then the rest of the game, if she sees you, she just yells at you a lot. And they use a lot of the imagery from the ghost dimension, though.
Oh, well, that's not bad.
The cover art has a girl with that black tendril smoky thing. And then during the game, the demon does show up a couple of times, and it looks like the black Toby demon from the end of the ghost dimension.
Okay.
Finally, though, you gather a candle, a photo, a hairbrush, and interrupt a satanic ritual to stop the coming of the demon. And the crazy lady is killed by the demon.
You hit her with the hairbrush?
Yeah, why would those items stop that?
I put them at 6 points of the pentagram, and it stops it.
Oh, good to know.
A hairbrush. That's all you need to defeat Satan.
And a photo, and a candle, and some other shit that you found in drawers after hours of looking.
Candle, photo, I get, but a hairbrush. That is the head scratcher.
And then, hey, you stop the demon. You've won the game. And so the little girl is leading you out of the house, and then she turns around, has a Katie demon face, attacks you, and you die. Game over. So even if you win, you lose.
Yeah, this sounds like a Paranormal Activity film, like unsatisfying and a big jump scare right at the end.
Yeah, I'm hearing you complain that there was no plot and it was hard to control and could be beaten easily if you actually did have control. But what about the sound design? Because I do see on Wiki, it was apparently nominated for Best Sound Design for an Indie Game at the 16th Annual Game Audio Network Guild Awards.
They have awards just for game audio? That's very specific. Like, how many categories is in that award show?
I don't even begin to know. I feel like if anyone cared about game audio, it would be Arnie. Like, did it at least have cool sound design?
It did take a lot of the thrum sounds from the movies.
Okay.
Other than that, it reminded me of Seventh Guest. I'd open a door, creak. And it didn't have great spatial audio. I mean, I've played games with nice Dolby surround audio, and this, maybe in the indie category, it's going up against, like, Atari-level stuff, but no, stay away from this game. I'm so disappointed. I was so excited, because one line I read when I was looking for this game, maybe it was on Steam, where I bought it for Windows, but I swear I read the best VR game for Oculus. Now that's the only game I've played so far for Oculus, and I'm like, if this is as good as it gets, I want my fucking money back.
Yeah, I think they meant the best indie sound for a game for Oculus.
Yeah, they parsed that down to meaninglessness. Okay, sure. Something was great, but it didn't sound like a great time. And again, looking at the property in whole, now that we're six films into this, starting to talk about the seventh one, I don't even know how you would adapt the story of these movies. It would just be wandering around a house and hoping some little girl would not fang out as she gets you out. Yeah, sounds accurate.
Yeah, I wish I loved the game. I wanted to love the game. I was so excited to break out my new Oculus and dive into the scary world. And now I'm like, wow, I didn't even want to finish it. It was just that frustrating.
Okay, so unpopular sixth movie, money-sucking video game ripoff. Why all of a sudden in 2019 is Jason Blum saying it's coming back? And then why does it take two more years before they actually cast and film it and put it out?
Well, the pandemic, I mean, that did cause a lot of delays for things.
I mean, sure. Yeah, all right, yes, 2020 is a lost year, but they can knock these things out in a matter of weeks. Summer 2019, they're making this thing. It should have been out October 2019.
The script was being written in February 2020.
Okay.
I mean, it took all 28 days of February to write this.
Well, I just remember where I was in February of 2020 and then where I wasn't in February of 2020.
Yeah.
Okay. So they announced it without really having a clear idea about what they were going to do, just that they thought that enough time had passed since the Ghost Dimension that people might actually be nostalgic for it. And the writer that was working on it right when the pandemic hit is the long-standing writer. It's not the people that cobbled together the last movie and, I would insist, did a very bad job of tying to the mythology. This is Christopher Landon, the guy that's been here since part two.
Which made me think, I'd heard that this was a new beginning, almost a reboot of the Paranormal Activity series, and yet, with Christopher Landon at the helm, I'm like, we're gonna have Christy and Katie show up somewhere. There's no way he built that dense, tangled weave of timelines and things just to see somebody else finish it off. He's going to tie back. Nope, there's not a tie.
Yeah, next of kin. It's going to be about Katie or Christie's. I don't know if they even have kids at this point. Who knows what happened with Hunter? But yeah, we're going to find out at the end that they were related to that original family somehow.
I think there is a tie. Something in the credits tells me there's a tie.
Something on Wikipedia tells me that they may have been leading towards a tie in future films.
Yeah, when we get into it, I guess we could get into it. But yes, I agree with you. You would think that the idea would be to get back to the early ones that people liked and, yeah, try to find maybe a new angle. Again, you say that found footage is the thing that defines the franchise. I say if you're really trying to start over and anew, let's not do that. Let's not go in that direction. Let's just make Blair Witch 2 did that. We're just going to make a real movie around people that like to film themselves. You could work in some camera shots every now and then, but we do not need an entire 90-minute film in which people are photographing the dark.
Yeah, I thought there was a good chance that they ditched that for this one. Again, you could still have it tied into those previous films, but next of kin, reboot, or a restart, like, just tell a traditional story.
I would have been happy with that, because, admittedly, I feel like a kid locked in the closet by his dad with a pack of cigarettes and said, smoke them all. I'm just tired of the conventions of the Paranormal Activity films, where it's 50 minutes of people wandering around with cameras getting up to speed, and then 30 minutes maybe of doors slamming before 5 minutes of scares, quote unquote. Admittedly, the first film worked on me, but six films in, I'm just wanting them to do something different. And yet, it's a Paranormal Activity movie. Why would I hope for that?
Well, the difference is we got a new director. We have, you know, one thing to do, if you want to be real nostalgic, is get Oren Peli back. He's still producing these movies, but of course he has no talent. We saw that in the first film. He's not a filmmaker. He just wants a check. Go watch Area 51. It will confirm that. We're going to get somebody that had a little bit of indie sci-fi success about 8 years ago. William Ubik made a film with Lawrence Fishburne, and I don't even remember who the young actors were, but it was kind of cool, called The Signal. That sound familiar?
Mm-mm. Does not ring a bell.
It's like, I can't even really remember the plot other than they go to some underground lab and there's all this trippy imagery. But then he kind of screwed the pooch a few years ago and made Underwater with Kristen Stewart.
Oh my God, that movie's so bad.
Oh, that one's bad, yeah.
Yeah, I felt like it got butchered in the editing. Like, there was probably a more cohesive film.
There is stuff missing in that film, I agree.
Yes, I totally agree. Somebody realized it was a bad movie and decided it shouldn't be a ponderous bad movie. Let's just chop it up so it's a nonsensical bad movie.
Mmm.
Why'd they put on that voiceover then in the beginning? It feels like they're trying to catch us up.
Yeah, there's really no explanation for half the shit that happens in that movie.
No.
Yeah, I don't consider it necessarily a great thing that he is here at the helm. But hey, it is the end and an opportunity to bring back and tie together all the things that have never quite come together in this series. You call the dense plotting that happened before, I would say they barely tried.
I didn't say dense plotting. No. Dense timeline, crossovers. No, not plot, not plot.
Okay, all right. Thank you for clarifying, because I've been still waiting for enough plot to call it even a story. There's implications of things going on. There's never anything going on. The other bad omen floating around here, it didn't even go to theaters, right? Like, I know that getting theatrical distribution right now is hard, but this is a series that has flourished. Movie theaters have done well by airing these. The fact that it was premiering on Paramount Plus and nowhere else around Halloween, not a vote of confidence.
I think they probably didn't want to go up against, specifically I'm thinking Halloween Kills, but October was a big month for cinema. I mean, Venom took a big bite out of the box office. It felt like every week in October, there was a big movie, and that left no room for Paranormal Activity. Wouldn't you rather bump your subscription numbers and put something in the W column instead of being second or third place to Venom and Halloween?
Who subscribed to Paramount Plus just for this film? I want to see those numbers. I want to see the press release. I know Netflix likes to brag whenever they have some show that's got the most views ever. Show it to me, Paramount Plus. What are the numbers for Next to Kid? How many $5 subscriptions did this bring you?
I did.
You had to.
Yeah, I had to. But I never had or had any desire to get Paramount Plus. And I subscribed last night. And we'll have it for 30 more days for free.
I have been a Paramount Plus subscriber ever since Picard.
What have you watched besides Picard?
I've started a Star Trek The Original Series rewatch.
So Star Trek Plus is what they should call it.
But that is also on Netflix, so I didn't need Paramount Plus for that. I loved the Real World reunion show they did, where they got all seven people from season one of The Real World together in the same loft again, and they're still fighting. It's great! I'm less interested. They also now got season two started. I'm less interested in that. So I go to Paramount Plus. We're recording this in mid-December. This movie came out in late October, so it's been out, what, 6 weeks?
Mm-hmm.
And I figure, being an original on Paramount Plus, I'm not going to have to look for this thing. So I just go onto Paramount Plus and click popular movies.
Not this one.
It's not there. Do you want to know what's more popular than this?
I mean, I can think of hundreds, thousands, but what? What were they pushing?
Well, Clifford the Big Red Dog. I mean, that's a more recent film, so yeah, I'll go with that.
Yeah, that's an exclusive. You have to go to theaters for that, unless you have the subscription.
Sonic the Hedgehog.
Hmm.
Transformers The Last Night.
Oof. Maybe Dark of the Moon, but The Last Night.
Daddy's Home 1 and 2 are more popular.
Oh no, what's Amazon going to do now that they don't have those to stream all the time?
Paw Patrol Live at Home.
I'm seeing a certain family audience bent. Is that what they're going for here?
It seems that way, but South Park post-COVID and South Park Bigger, Longer, and Uncut, also more popular than Paranormal Activity. But if I go to the horror page, then Paranormal Activity Next of Kin is number one, with A Quiet Place as number two, and in number three, because why? World War Z?
So no one's watching horror on Paramount Plus. Five people watched horror films and it totally skewed that.
So yeah, I had to dig through a menu to find this movie. I was honestly legitimately shocked by that. And even more shocked that South Park's movie from 1999 and Transformers The Last Night, out of the entire Transformers series, The Last Night beats this.
I mean, I've seen our listeners bring up all kinds of obscure movies on Facebook and whatnot. Not one person, I think, I haven't seen one thing mentioning Next of Kin. Like, no one watched this thing.
Yeah, it does feel invisible. I did, which meant that I also didn't hear any critical reactions. I had no confirmation it was going to be bad. Just this dreaded feeling that, oh, well, there goes $5. But in order to know what I experienced, I think, Arnie, you got to give him the plot. Who's next of kin?
As a baby, Margot was abandoned by her birth mother, who left the child unattended outside a hospital. Now an adult, Margot wants to find her birth mother. Margot's friend Chris is filming a documentary depicting Margot's reunion with her blood relatives. And with them is Dale, the sound man for the documentary. Margot had been contacted by Samuel, an Amish man who found Margot through a mail-away DNA test. Samuel takes Margot and her friends back to his community at Beeler Farm, where the trio stay with Margot's grandfather, Jacob. Margot learns her mother was Sarah, a rebellious girl who got pregnant out of wedlock and refused to reveal the father's identity. As the Amish norms refused children out of marriage, they decreed the child be given to a married couple in the community. Refusing to let that happen, Sarah took Margot to the hospital and left her. Margot stays in the Amish village to learn more about her heritage, but she and her friends witness strange things. A group of people wander into the woods in the night to a secret and locked church. Jacob oversees the birth of a two-headed goat who's immediately slaughtered, and strange noises come from Jacob's house in the night. Margot and Chris sneak into the church and discover the people of the community aren't actually Amish. They worship the demon Asmodeus. An internet search reveals that a Norwegian village was troubled, neighbors killing neighbors, crops not growing, and these acts were blamed on Asmodeus. To stop the troubles, they performed a ritual to trap Asmodeus in the body of a woman. The demon was then passed from mother to daughter until present day, and Margot is next in the bloodline. Turns out she wasn't randomly found by Samuel, she was hunted down so the community can put the demon in her body. Margot is attacked by an unknown force and becomes unresponsive. Then she disappears. Chris searches for her. He goes down a deep hole found under the church's altar and sees an old woman performing a ritual on Margot. Chained up down there is Margot's mother, Sarah, who's turned into an inhuman creature due to being possessed by Asmodeus. Chris and Margot run but are chased by Sarah, who kills Dale. Margot calms Sarah down by saying, "I'm your daughter," and uses that distraction to kill the demon woman. But that's released Asmodeus, and now the community at Beeler Farm start to kill each other. Margot and Chris drive off and escape. We then jump to some police body cams. The cops find Samuel alive at the farm. Samuel was possessed by something. Asmodeus, probably. And Samuel seems to will the cops to kill themselves. Samuel then takes a police car and drives away. As credits roll,
they're going to retain a lot of elements that we've seen before. I do feel like this is a Paranormal Activity when we see March 2nd, 2021, and we cut to confessional video of a filmmaker who's starting a documentary. But I will say this much. The improvement is the video image itself. Whatever cameras they've gotten, so much better than... Well, maybe that ghost dimension camera was pretty cool, but if you actually want to see what's going on and not just like trippy CGI tendrils in the air, this is the best looking one of the series.
I think they're using iPhone 11s, 12s, whatever would have been out. Like at one point, I think they are supposed to be using their phone cameras, but I agree. This is great looking. And at one point I was wondering, oh, did they give up the found footage thing? Like they're at a restaurant and they're doing shot reverse shot. Instead of just like yes. Straight on and like, and I'm like, wait, what's going on? It's become a regular movie. Great. And then I guess that's how good Chris is, this documentarian. He's able to capture these great edits throughout this film.
The first shot of Chris made me think that they broke the rule. I thought that they went to a third person perspective and maybe they were going to do Blair Witch 2. We start off in found footage, but then we see Chris with a static shot. I'm like, did they just jump to a third-person generic camera shot? If they did, I think we're supposed to think he just set up the GoPro or something and had a stationary camera, and because he's making a documentary, he's using a whole bunch of cameras, whereas in the past, we've been pretty much stuck with one person, one video camera.
Mm-hmm. Positioned in one location.
But I'll agree. I think this movie looks better. I think that the director here has a better use of lighting and color than I've seen in the previous ones. Part of it may be we're actually outside of a house. We're starting in a restaurant. We're looking at a parking lot. We're going to be on a farm. Every other Paranormal Activity film has been pretty much in the house, with the exception of the marked ones, which had a neighborhood, and we liked that one better for it.
Yeah, sometimes it looks like a Terrence Malick movie, that we're going out to these,
yes,
like, country vistas and what have you. I thought it was Days of Heaven sometimes. So, an improvement already, something to say, I'm intrigued. We're going in a right direction.
Also intriguing, an Amish community. You know, I've always been a little bit fascinated by the Amish, and I think that's a really interesting place to set a movie about an outsider coming in to learn about the culture.
Or it's even set a camera. I mean, like, you're going to tell me they're going to put cameras all around the Amish town hall? This makes no sense.
Yeah, I want to know how much gas they have to keep this generator going to get all this footage they're going to get. But I do like the setting. Like, we talked about the midwives, and this feels like, yes, it could be part of that cult. And, you know, the whole Wicker Man thing with the outsiders, the English coming into this small community, that's a fun setup.
And at first, I mean, of course, the surprise, they're not Amish, but that's the way we're to understand it. As it starts here in the beginning, Margot is a character that is, this is kind of a neat detail. She was abandoned at birth. She's always wondered what her previous story is, what her family lineage is. She believes that she's connected with this Amish clan, that Samuel Beeler is going to fill in missing pieces.
Yeah, I didn't know, like, when you go on Rumspringa, go to the club, go live amongst the English, wear the English's clothes, like, really party it up, and I guess do a DNA test as well, spit in a tube, mail it in, find out who you are.
Well, I thought he stayed on Rumspringa. I think what she was saying is he actually stayed away from the community. He found a woman who liked his ability to woodwork and things. I think at the beginning, we're hearing the story of Samuel's non-Amish life. And because of that, he has a computer and he has a DNA test and things like that.
Yeah, okay. I thought he was still doing the Rumspringa thing. And yeah, for some reason, got a DNA test while doing that.
He just got a DNA test, found out he's 100% Amish.
I mean, it's only been 7 months that he's been outside. So I think that he is, and again, this woman that allegedly told him to do this is not in the picture anymore. My sense is that he is still sowing his oats. So it's kind of confusing that he's going back. And most confusing of all, it's weird that I figured he was joining the crew. I thought that we would have a lot from his perspective.
Yeah.
And he's just really a vehicle by which three of the filmmakers are going to go. It's really going to be this story of Margot and her cameraman, we've already mentioned, is Chris. And when they fly to wherever this community is, I'm assuming they went up north, maybe.
They didn't go down south. It's snowing.
Yeah. I don't know. Like, if they were in Arizona, is this East Coast, West Coast? Par for the course. There is no fine details about what's going on, but they are picked up by Dale, a very tall, very eccentric sound recorder.
Can I just say this movie freaked me the fuck out when we see them flying into whatever airport they're going into? Everybody's wearing a mask. This is my very first time seeing a movie that acknowledges the pandemic and is taking place during the pandemic.
I did notice that too, because it's funny, just this pandemic's been so traumatic. Like, you watch old movies and you're like, why don't they have masks on? That's so dangerous. But like, oh, because they didn't have COVID then. But yeah, watching this, I'm like, oh, they got masks. Maybe this was filmed during the pandemic. I guess it was at some point. We're still in it.
It's almost filmed exactly as they say. It wasn't March. I think it was May. But yeah, they were 2 months beyond the timeline of this movie. This movie's going to go from March 2nd to the 15th. And 2021. Yeah, you could get vaccines by that point, but by and large, people were still wearing masks.
Yeah, because they say to the driver, they're like, we have vaccines. Is it okay if we take the mask off? And Dale's like, I've had COVID 5 times.
Yeah, that's weird to make a COVID joke like this. But again, I think they want to, again, contemporize. The idea is to bring it into the now, that this feels immediate. We are there. We are living this. This paranormal activity we're about to experience is right outside our door.
I just really hope that someday somebody looks back at this movie and sees the masks and is able to pinpoint this to the 2 to 3 years it came out, kind of like when I watched Blast from the Past and remember the 2 to 3 years that swing dance had a revival in the 90s.
Instead of it being our future and everyone understands?
Yes, exactly.
Yes, that would be nice. I agree. Should also be said that we did have some other found footage pop up that Sarah on her phone, and I don't know how she came across this, can actually watch her being dropped off as a baby in 1997 by her mother. And so that's probably the start of this documentary.
Yeah, it was like security footage, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like where the sliding doors open and there's like, I wouldn't even call it a lobby. It's just like the entrance. And she just, a woman in a baseball cap threw her down there and she wants to know why. Is this woman still alive? Why did she go drive so far away to abandon her? Again, we don't know where locations are, but I assume it was hundreds of miles. And why does she look so scared? I don't know, because I'm not. Boy, this movie. It will take forever for them to even think about doing something that might be paranormal and scary.
Not that long. I mean, we get the birth of the two-headed goat pretty early on, but it...
And an hour. An hour!
That's the first time I got excited in this film. I'm like, ooh, two-headed goat, let's do some crazy stuff. But no, that's... Yeah, it's going to come and go.
No. I mean, at the start of this, they get to the farm or whatever, and it's just about... Really, it is the Amish ways themselves that are supposed to be scary. The fact that we have this old bearded guy coming out and saying, you can't stay here because... And they have to go find a motel.
Of course, if the whole trick was to bring her there, why immediately send her away? What if she just went back home? I mean...
Yeah. It makes you think that maybe this great script wasn't entirely all hashed out or figured out or changed on the spot.
I mean, I get it. You could have reverse psychology and they want her to think that they don't want her there. So that way she's more anxious to stay and whatnot. But if you're just planning something logically, if you're pulling a grift, which is what these people are doing to her, when they say yes, you stop saying no.
Yeah, no, you immediately hand her a drug drink and then take her to the pit. I mean, they're here. Again, this is like 12 days of them going around this place. I don't know why they're so slow to utilize them in the way that they need to. But it is all so that they can do the very familiar things like, hey, remember how people sleepwalk at night? Well, apparently little Eli sleepwalks all the way for 20 miles to bang on their window.
And that's what it told me. I'm like, okay, why did this Eli kid just show up there? And they're never going to explain it. Like, I guess sleepwalking. But I'm like, okay, this is a plant. This community is not to be trusted.
Well, you knew that because it's a Paranormal Activity movie and they went into the community. I figured for sure that they were nefarious to begin with.
But this, they're going to try to do this whole ruse where like, maybe they really are. Like, this is telling me right away to suspect them.
I assumed that they were midwives. I never thought that this was going to be disconnected. And I always assumed that this was an offshoot of the very same cult that Grandma Lois and all were running in SoCal.
Yeah. I mean, in that last film, we found out there's like 7 princes of hell. So maybe this is just one of the other ones. Again, I talked about that. We'll have a trilogy for each prince of hell. Maybe that's what they're doing.
I'm almost sure of it, but I'm biting my tongue to explain why. Right now, we have a sleepwalking kid. And again, when they actually drive him back, it's like, okay, well, now you can stay here. And then they find him sleepwalking the next night around the generator or whatever. So again, a lot with the waking up and wandering around kind of stuff we've seen in all of these Paranormal Activity movies.
I do like some of the stuff in this village when we think they're Amish. Like, there's one of the daughters that wants to know about TikTok. Apparently, the Amish have heard about that. And then there's, like, just this musical number where they're just banging on tables. I'm like, this is kind of a good song. Like, I'm kind of into this.
I liked it when everybody got in on the act and was really pounding that table for all they were worth.
if they weren't in every moment trying to make these people creepy, 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 and actually, I don't know, did real character work where, like, we understood people. Again, Samuel.
This is the seventh Paranormal Activity film, Stuart. You want character work now?
No, I know what film I'm in. I'm just saying, if they had actually wanted to do any of that, this would be a very appealing setting. This would be a good setup, and I would really be happy to be here. But again, their guide for all of this, he's basically going to just guide them around and then, like, drop out of the movie until the very end, where he's suddenly something.
Yeah, I thought Samuel was going to be a very important character. He is not.
Same here. I thought for sure, because he's the first one we're introduced to. Really, though, outside of Jacob, I don't find a lot of these characters able to be differentiated.
No.
No, I wrote down names and then realized it really didn't matter whether it was Grace or Mary or whatever.
I don't even know who you're talking about. Yeah. Tell me the actions they did. That's all I'll remember.
Yeah, there's a little girl that's holding a doll and she's called it Sarah. And wouldn't you know, that's the name of Margot's mom. So again, they'll spend a lot of time debating the idea of maybe she's still here or what influence has she left. Again, there's so little information we've been given about Sarah, it's hard to find suspicions for where the story doesn't match up here. But eventually they're going to mic up the elder, that's Jacob, and he's going to say that Sarah was a wild child. Sarah got pregnant willfully to defy their ways with a guy in town, and it was their tradition of shunning that caused her to drive all that way and drop the baby off at the hospital.
I think he's telling a true story, don't you? I mean...
No.
No.
No. She hid this baby so that they wouldn't get it.
She didn't want it possessed.
No, I believe that. But I believe what he's saying about not knowing who the father is and all of that. I think where the story falls apart is when he says she didn't want to lose the baby, so she took the baby to a hospital. And he's even asked, how is that better? I mean, to just abandon the baby on the sidewalk. That's where the story falls apart. But I think Sarah probably knew what she was destined for.
She might have already been possessed and needed to get the baby away from her, is the way I would take it.
Yeah, there's a lot of exposition spit out at the end of this. Sarah is not the first one because they are so elusive about her boyfriend or the man who knocked her up. I figured maybe that's Toby. It's got to be something demonic, but she's not the first one to carry this demon. Like, this has been going on.
No, this went back to Norway.
Yeah.
Okay.
The old country.
Yeah, I know there's a bunch of exposition spit out and, like, some of it went by me.
But is this even horror? Because I have to ask, obviously, the thing that they love.
I've been saying that no since part one, Stuart.
No, but this is a comedy. This has now become like an Adam Sandler-ish kind of down on the farm.
Because of Dale?
Yeah, didn't Pauly Shore do one of those?
Pauly Shore did one, yes. Son-in-law.
Uh-huh. Yes. When they just decide that it's like, we've got this Dale character. He's done a lot of sitcoms. We don't have a clear script, so let's just have him get on horses, put on outfits and moonwalk, and just take attention away from anything we might think is vaguely frightening.
Okay, Dan Lippert has been on sitcoms because not a single one of these actors, Wiki does not give them pages. So I think that means he hasn't had a starring role.
Yeah, the Chris, for what it's worth, is on a procedural, even now, and Emily's done a couple episodes of Charmed. Again, they've all worked, but you wouldn't want to cast a recognizable face because the whole point is we're to think that they're real people and that what we're watching is a snuff film. You don't want to break that illusion.
They do fine, honestly. I like Dale in this. The comic relief is the character I'm drawn to here.
Yeah, because it's the only character in this. I agree, Arnie. Whenever Dale's making a joke, I'm laughing because there's nothing else here to hold on to.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's almost like waving a white flag. Yeah, we don't have anything here. We're not scary. We can't do it. We got nothing. We're here on the farm. We thought the movie would write itself. We thought we had six other films to pull from. And all we got is, I don't know, a girl holding a yarn doll and saying, this is Sarah, and she's still here.
And she doesn't like you.
Yeah, and then some late night thumping in a scene that has no bearing. We know that Sarah is actually in a pit in the bottom of this church, but for some reason, we're also supposed to think that she's living above them and invisibly sleeping on her old bed.
What was that?
Yeah, they never explained it. Who knows?
What was it was they thought it would be really cool to have Margot sneak up there, find some old documentations, you know, a scary monster drawn on the wall, and then hide under the bed and have, you know, the bed springs bend because somebody's laying on it. And guess what? There's no one there when she pokes the camera up, except narratively speaking, that has no bearing on what's going on. And the face that's outside the window, all of that stuff, it just, again.
Yeah, that is not where the demon is. The demon's in a pit in a church.
Yeah, they probably didn't know that when they staged all this. It feels like a series of improvisations. We'll figure out the story later.
I honestly thought Sarah was in the house, though. And looking back, I still think that they took her to the pit for the ritual later on, but I don't think she lived in the pit.
You think she was invisibly living up in her old room and reading her old letters and drawing on the walls?
Isn't that the only thing that makes sense given the evidence?
No.
No, what makes sense is the fact that somebody probably one night smoked a doobie and said, you know, it'd be cool if we rigged this up. And like, yeah, let's do it. And since this is a familiar feeling scene, yeah, they just threw it in. I mean, this has happened many times throughout the series. They've had information, moments of jump scare that contradict what's actually going on. I'm just pointing out that we have, again, what is it, about 40 minutes before we get to the church and they actually start to bother to think about what actually is going on?
Yeah, they're dropping hints. Like, they find the church earlier, but they can't get in. Jacob shows up and says it's forbidden and for holy reasons. And yeah, it's about a 30-minute mark. She's snooping around the room upstairs. But yeah, the church comes about 45 minutes into it.
Yeah, when we get the two-headed goat. That is when the movie begins for me. And like, they got to dispose of that goat.
It's a sacrifice. I mean, when we finally get into this church, we'll see drawings on the ground that are obviously referenced to things that we're going to see later in the film. The basics that I got is if the monster is allowed to grow too powerful, then if we're not sacrificing things to it, then we're going to all kill each other and there'll be an apocalypse. And so two-headed goats are a sign that we need to get in on this. It's just kind of convenient then that Margot is here right here in this moment at the exact moment that the apocalypse is about to happen.
Well, that's why they found her when they did. Yes.
I mean, convenient.
They went and got her because now is the time.
Yeah, okay. And she just started making a documentary because
her friend has a camera and wanted to film it.
I mean, we're supposed to believe that she's the active character that came here for this story. But yes, late into this movie, they're going to try and say that she was catfished and tricked into coming here when she had no idea. Anyway, yes, the two-headed goat is kind of cool. I'll give you that.
I wish I had gotten a better look at the goat, but yeah. And I thought they were going to worship the goat. No, they slaughter the goat.
I just hope it was a sign of things to come. Like, okay, we're ramping it up. We're going to give you some scares now because, like we talked about, this film looks better than any of the other Paranormal Activity ones. Like, you just do a straight-up horror film. But no, they want, yeah, all this walking around in the night trying to start generators. It's a bore.
When they get into the church, I really like the lighting and the camera work when they're shooting down that big hole in the ground, the way that the contrast is turned up where the walls are almost white and the hole is deep black. This is where I really liked the look going on.
Yeah, it feels like a great setup for a good scare going down this hole, not knowing what you're going to run into, but no, nothing's going to happen.
She's scared when she gets down there and comes back up in a hurry.
She hears some growling, maybe.
Yeah, there's noises like in all these films. We hear some noises.
Yeah, they threw the goat down there and maybe there's some bones and it's been eaten. And again, this like drip, drip, drip of a faucet that needs to be like pouring out plot details as fast as they can. We're not going to wait around. I mean, this movie is only 90 minutes, but really, you're just going to waste our time? You haven't learned anything, I guess is what I was really thinking.
Yeah, I was going to say, you're complaining about this, but I've been saying this for 7 films now.
No, it's not just you. That first movie was an absolute nothing burger. Nothing has ever happened in any of these movies, but this is your chance to take the reins and do it. Make the fucking movie.
Yeah, I agree there. This was their chance to do something different. They could still be about demons possessing bodies. That could be their Paranormal Activity, but just do it like a movie. Don't do this found footage. They had lots of opportunities. Yes, I agree, Stuart. They have squandered all of them.
They had nothing at the beginning, and then slowly but surely, this one screenwriter has been dribbling out plot, and when witches and covens and apocalyptic fantasies are coming, I think, oh, fourth one, I'm like, The fifth one, I'm like, okay, and now I'm like, you're not getting there. And is it because you don't know what you're doing? You think that you can keep stalling us and make 13 more of these. Either way, I resent it.
There is door number three, Stuart, which is, this is what worked for them. This is the series formula, and so they're just continuing to follow the formula.
But it stopped working. That's why they had to take so many years off. That is your chance to go, okay, here's what worked. Here's what people got sick of. Now let's make something that's new and exciting, and we'll get people back into this IP.
Right, yeah. Why did that work in the beginning might be a more interesting question than why it's not working now. And I'll look at both of those when we get to the end of this. But I guess my initial mild feelings of, oh, this isn't nearly as bad as I thought it was going to be. By the time we get into the church and they find nothing other than some drawings that imply that, yeah, some demon is going to make them kill themselves and they need to make a sacrifice of a woman. I mean, we come into these movies presuming. Stop implying and start telling and start surprising. That's what I really, really need at this point.
I was a little bit shocked the next night when Margot gets flung to the ceiling and dragged around like Tina in Nightmare on Elm Street and leaves a big bloody mark.
Tina in Nightmare on Elm Street? It's like Katie and all of the other. I mean, this is another one of their moves. This is what they always do. We got to have that last thing where it was the Spielberg insistence. We got to have Mika thrown at the camera. You do that shot of Katie pulled out of the bed.
Yeah, but usually that all happens off camera is the thing. Here, we're seeing her slam around the ceiling and things. And
from the first movie, we saw Katie dragged out of bed and down the hall.
Yes, we saw her dragged out of the room. We didn't see the hall. But
okay, you're splitting hairs, and all I'm saying is they're falling back to old tropes. They're not really connecting the old tropes to new ideas.
This is the closest we get, I feel, to the old movie's mythology, though, is because Margot got grabbed by a force, flung around, and now she's kind of catatonic and out of it, and that's usually the sign that Toby's coming.
Yeah, she's Katie.
So is Asmodeus, his reach is going out of the pit and being able to lift her up. Like, that is the thing. Like, the demon is in a pit in a church, and she's still being affected outside of that. It seems like he's got a pretty good reach. Maybe he doesn't need a body.
This is what I'm saying, is that I think that it's been this invisible force. I think the reason why the kid's sleepwalking, I think the reason why the old nutty lady is peeling her fingers off instead of the potatoes is because there was a little tile on the floor that says first it will go for the young and the weak or feeble or something like that. I think that this is a sign of the growing influence of the evil. And again, you would want to get ahead of that and be like, time to do a sacrifice tonight. Why are we waiting three more days? I just don't know. All indications are two-headed goats. And yeah, people going crazy and evil forces flinging people around. We know that, yeah, Asmodeus is too powerful not to address him right now. But maybe it has to be the Ides of March, because that's what they're building to. It's March 15th. He's a big Julius Caesar fan. I don't know why that date means anything in this mythology. But yes, that seems to be everything was about getting back Margot for this moment so that she could turn into the new host of the evil.
And this is where the focus really shifts. Margot's been carrying this movie, but now that she's catatonic, it's up to Chris. And what are Chris and Dale doing? They've got a broken car. And so they have to walk to town to get a car battery. This is stalling.
Well, Dale's been having his own movie, but yes, I agree. Chris, like any good cameraman, has not been seen that much. Like, you don't want him in the shot. And so it's only become a problematic thing because, like, I don't really know anything about him. Like, I know Dale's a goofball and is not reliable, I don't know, does Chris have a crush on Margot, or what even brought him to this project?
I thought they were a couple.
There was one scene early on when they were at a party where I thought that they were together, but it really wasn't totally sure.
And I guess we know we're in danger, you know, Dale and Chris got to go get that battery because Margo is snooping around. I did like this scene, like she opens a closet, I think it's Jacob's closet, and there's a laptop and a router in there. He's got Wi-Fi going, and that's not your grandfather's Amish.
Mm-hmm. Which the mailman confirms when Dale and Chris hitchhike and go into town to get the van battery because all of a sudden the van has stopped working. And yes, they're building the idea that eventually, like Arnie said, these movies are like, we'll get there, but we only like to do about 20 minutes of actually a horror movie.
There's so much time devoted to, like, what kind of battery are they looking for? If you ask me what kind of battery my car needed, I don't know, a car battery.
You'd know when you have to go get one, though. You'd figure that shit out real quick.
If you go to any auto parts store, they just look up the model and they can figure it out for you. There's so much time spent to, like, what, this C13 battery or whatnot? Maybe we got one in stock. Oh, yeah, there it is.
Oh, I have to go check the back room for you. There's none up here.
But that's found footage for you. The idea is if you flip in the mundane, the bucolic, the stuff that, like, we all go through that feels frivolous, and mix that with this amazing paranormal activity, suddenly it legitimizes and makes that stuff real.
Yeah, I agree. In the first act, you do that. Not in the third act. Let's get to the scares. Let's get to the demon. Let's get to people going crazy, because that's what I want in my climax.
Okay, so Asmodeus. I didn't hear it in this movie. I know that they, like, jump on the auto parts internet connection and do a quick Google. I didn't see it in anything there, and I only watched this movie once.
I know where you're going, and it's not in the movie. I think they're saving it for a sequel.
Yeah. In credits, Asmodeus is booked. The actors that will play Sarah crawling around later are booked as Asmodeus from the Book of Tobit.
Oh, that's very close to Toby.
Yes. So that is the connection.
That's an actual biblical book, too.
It's apocryphal, then.
It is.
Is Asmodeus in that biblical book?
Yes. And it is known as the Book of Tobit, also known as the Book of Tobias, or the Book of Toby.
So there's the connection. And it was already there. I mean, if you had ever seen a Paranormal Activity, you know the drill about the woman gets possessed and what have you. But it's been messy. Again, we've never felt like, is it about the firstborns or is it about the girls being possessed? Now we're kind of getting this thing that says an evil spirit, really, as a way of keeping it tame, these girls need to stay possessed, because otherwise, if the spirit gets out, we're all screwed.
I mean, that kind of makes sense. I kind of like what this does. If you could get rid of all this unnecessary, unscary stuff and make this a short, it might be all right. But I do like that, yeah, there is a reason the girls are being possessed. I always felt like in the previous six, it was possessing girls, but it really wanted a boy, but maybe not. Maybe the midwives matter, maybe not. I feel this is cleaner if they just stuck with this.
Yeah, I could go with this. It creates a new kind of tension, because on one hand, we want to see Margot get away, right? Oh my God, I hope she doesn't become possessed by this Tobit or Asmodeus or whatever we want to call it. But at the same time, if I'm going to die because this woman won't take the demon, get her in the hole. Quick, keep her there.
No, I think that's an interesting setup. We don't want to have to pass on this demon to another woman. But if we don't do that, like, our whole village is dead. We are all going to murder each other.
There was a similar movie in the 80s, The Believers, with Martin Sheen. I don't know if you ever saw that. But the book, anyway, had a similar kind of twist about all of that stuff. Of like, on one hand, you want all the black magic to stop. On the other hand, the people practicing the black magic are really trying to protect us from greater evils. And that's a good tension to play with. But again, wouldn't you have wanted to play with this, I don't know, 30, 40 minutes ago?
I've said that with all of these. Yes, make them traditional films with a traditional act structure. They'd be so much better. Like, again, I like the bones of this film, especially when we get to the end. I think it's a good outline for a script that someone should write instead of the script that someone wrote.
And because they have to do it as found footage, I feel it gets them stuck focusing on the wrong things for way too long.
Yeah.
When we could have just gotten on with it. I mean, it could have been Rosemary's Baby. Instead, it's the Dale show with him making jokes about Cracker Barrel and goofing off.
But they do get back to town, and while Dale's putting in the car battery, Chris goes to find Margot, and sure enough, she's in that hole underground, and we're
at the climax. Was it the grandmother doing the ritual there, the one who'd cut her fingers off, or was this some lady we'd never seen before?
I don't know. They said something about a white witch, so I just wrote down that she was the white witch.
You say grandmother, and I just want to point out, we never understood Samuel's relationship to Margot. Brother, sister, cousin, whatever. Is Jacob his father? Is Lavina the mother? Was Eli his little brother? I don't know. It's just next of kin. We're not going to go with any more details than that. So I can't tell you what this is. It would have been nice if they had actually tried to tie a family tree together. That's the theme of this movie. You'd actually want to know how all these characters are related. But yes, Jacob got, I think there was a rather clumsy fight with Chris while still trying to photograph himself fighting with Jacob and his gun, and I think he threw him down in the pit.
Yeah.
And then I think that this mother who was trying to keep Margot under a spell, she's probably eaten, right? Or something, because the thing, we'll just call it Asmodeus. Sarah, possessed by Asmodeus, has been chained there, but figures out now that, or maybe has the strength now, to break those shackles and crawl up the shaft and chase these kids around the barn for a while.
Yeah, they're like mid-ceremony when Chris comes and interrupts it and frees Margot. So I guess that demon is at its peak power, but never got to transfer to a new body. I'm guessing that would have weakened it.
It's just weird serendipity to me, but the fact that when Chris gets down there, the old lady's like, "The salt! Don't move the salt!"
What is with all the salt? Like, they called out all these salt bags earlier. I still don't know what the deal is with the salt.
I just so happened to finish watching the Hit Monkey series on Hulu, where it's revealed you trap a demon spirit in a ring of salt.
Well, I knew that, but okay, that's all it is.
I didn't know that.
I don't think I need to know that. But anyway, I figured that's what it was. Again, it's not like any of these things are surprising. If these are revelations, yawn. I guess that's what I'm saying. I want to be truly surprised by things. You've implied these things for so long. Then when you kind of half tell us, it's like, yeah, I know. You're doing some ritual. And it's just disappointing. I just wish that they had taken what's kind of cool here and worked harder at making it feel real and lived in, rather than just be another found footage joke. What if, like, Sarah and her daughter, like, actually had a meaningful moment? What if we had actually built up to that and it actually meant something that she was going to kill her here in the barn loft? I don't know. You could have had something there.
Yeah, there's a big realization Margot has that the demon is Sarah, her mother, and yeah, don't you try to talk to your mom? Mommy, why'd you ditch me? Is this why? Like, you didn't want me to become this thing? Like, yeah, have some kind of moment like that.
But you're talking to a feral beast, so...
No, not in that moment. I mean, obviously she changes. You obviously can have a moment where they... Again, they do something weird here. I'm not sure about the beginning, but I'm 100% sure here. Chris gets knocked down, and the camera's on the ground, and we're for about 20 seconds... having a non-found footage moment. It's just a movie moment being filmed by nobody, but yet we're watching as she comes up to her mom.
Yeah, I felt like there's a few moments like that throughout this one where I'm like, maybe Chris is behind that camera. Who knows?
No, we know in this moment Chris is on the ground and we think he's even dead.
Yeah.
And we've even seen the shot where the camera got knocked in front of some hook and then a hand came down and grabbed that hook. And now, yeah, Margot is holding that hook as she comes up to her mother. And again, this should have been the crux of the movie. This is the movie she wanted to make. And it just ends up being, I don't know, is she dead? Like, Asmodeus obviously is going to create terror after this moment and everyone's going to kill themselves.
Yeah, I think Sarah died and that released the demon. And that's why he could create all the chaos he does.
Yeah, I mean, cleaner lines. This is what I'm asking for, people. Pick up the pace, cleaner lines.
I agree with you, but let me play devil's advocate or Asmodeus's advocate here. Isn't there something to be said about a story upon which you can project your own assumptions and
sure,
have messy lines and
yeah,
let it just be inference, and that makes it actually scarier than being spelled out like a recipe?
Yeah, but just don't make it boring like this.
You don't want a movie to be that way. You can have a plot be that way. You can have all of the paranormal activity be in the background, but in the foreground, there's the movie that we're experiencing. And that's what I would argue. You never want to have a movie that's empty and superficial. That's never a good thing. It's an elevated horror movie when you say, we're going to push all of the horror cliches to the background and focus on other things. We're going to make this really about adoption and being, you know, a foster kid and what that feels like. But yeah, don't tell me that that's what this movie is.
I'm not saying it worked here, but I'm just saying an absolute we need cleaner lines isn't necessarily the answer, because under the right direction and the right writer, messy lines can create a better experience.
I needed clean lines about characters and what they meant to each other. Relationally, that's what I needed. If they ended up not telling me all the things about Toby, I'm still mad about that, because believe me, it's been 7 movies now. You have now wasted my time for over 10 hours. I'm not cool with this. But I do feel like, yes, I can think of many movies where they use David Lynch, for example, like inference and not understanding becomes a part of the horror.
But that's something that takes craft and skill and not just like, let's go out to a farm and run around in the dark and see if it's scary or not.
Right. This is where talent matters.
The ending I find to be a complete mess, though, because this is the first Paranormal Activity where we presumably have survivors.
Well, I mean, not totally. The chick from part 2 came back in part 5.
Yeah, okay, true. But here, I felt like because Chris and Margot got in a car and drove away, I mean, our main characters seem to have gotten out of this unscathed. Sure, they lost Dale, but...
No, and demons are going to run rampant over the whole world and kill everyone.
Yeah, that's what I feel like this is implying, is Asmodeus is out. I feel like it was the village's duty, or whether they chose it or not, maybe once it traveled from Norway to America to like contain this thing. But no, this is a worldwide threat.
Yeah, and it's also a reference to Texas Chainsaw. You know, it's doing the whole, I'm crazy laughing as we're driving away from the insanity of the rural people.
But when we jump to police cam, I feel that's a bridge too far. I would have been fine with just ending the movie when they drove away, but now we're getting somebody else's footage in here, and that just felt wrong.
You feel like Chris would have edited this all together up until this point? Like, I don't know. I don't even know why this footage is put together.
Well, the presumption of found footage is we found this footage and we're showing you the highlights. I'm just saying it felt wrong. It was a serious instant, this is not how this should be told, reaction I had while watching this movie. I was really upset that they jumped to the cop cameras.
But again, when Margot is talking to Sarah, there are no cameras recording her. We're seeing something that is not being recorded. They have completely dispensed with that at their pleasure, whenever they want to. I think it's kind of clever, actually.
I thought Chris was recording. I never could understand why Chris kept recording, but I think Chris was recording.
Chris would have to stand up and be filming behind the monster in order to be doing that.
I didn't say it made sense.
Yeah, no, I don't. Look, doesn't need to make sense. No, I like this moment. I like that Samuel's going to walk out and make them shoot themselves. This feels darker and more nihilistic than any Paranormal Activity film we've got before.
Yeah, again, we keep waiting for the firstborn male to be that Antichrist. They keep saying we're making the Omen or Rosemary's Baby, and yet never really, like, whatever happened to Hunter? Talk about an underachiever. But yeah, I feel like Samuel is not playing around. When the cops show up and are drawing their guns, he, with a nod of his head, can have them turning those pistols on themselves and can drive a car. I mean, that's kind of funny. An Amish kid driving a car to changing the radio even so that he gets Loretta Lynn. Like, there's shows you that, yes, he's got all the skills that he needs to take over the rest of the world.
But did this movie have the skills it needed to get a recommend? Jacob Stewart, I'm going to pretend like I'm asking legitimately. Do you recommend Paranormal Activity Next of Kin? Jacob.
There were times throughout this film I'm like, oh, maybe this is going to be good. Like, maybe this is going to get over that line. It's not just a participation trophy recommend that I gave to 3 and 5. Maybe this looks good. It looks like it shouldn't be found footage. It's like, make it a traditional film, and I got a two-headed goat, and then we get a lot of craziness at the end. The problem is everything in between those moments. It's real slow and dull, and I can't believe you waited so many years to come back to this property, and you're just going to do the same tricks about sitting in a dark room and hearing a knock on the door or something like that. So I felt like there are some correct instincts towards the end of this. I actually, like I said during this review, I like the bare-bones skeleton spine of this story. Like, there's something good there, and it feels different than what we've seen in the previous six. But yeah, it's also got all the problems of the previous six films. Like, it wants to do this found footage thing where it's a carnival ride and we don't want to actually have a plot and tell a story and we're just going to have crazy things pop out at the end, which is fun, but it's not a satisfying experience. This is not recommend.
Stuart.
You know, I found it profound, honestly, profound when, you know, I'm watching the credits because you never know, is like something more going to happen at the end. The credits, they remind you. They're like, what I just watched was based on that $15,000 home movie that Oren Peli made in his house in San Diego 15 years ago. Wow. I don't even see the family resemblance in some ways to like those yuppies playing with the Ouija board. But on the other hand, I suppose Next of Kin is just doing all of those same moves. It's just trying to find a house to host them all in. And seven movies in, we still don't have a plot. We still don't have a mythology. We still don't have a movie. Paranormal Activity is a gimmick. And it has been one that has had a profound impact on popular culture. I think, you know, you asked why were those early movies such mega hits. I think we were at this weird inflection point where we were asking ourselves at the dawn of YouTube and smartphones whether we wanted to watch professionals tell stories on camera or whether we were just fine watching our friends put up content. And I do feel like those movies kind of trafficked between one foot in one and one foot in the other. But now, God, we're what, 12 years beyond all of this? Yeah, it's kind of pitiable that here they are doing those same old moves, thinking like maybe people will come back because we put it in a barn. Like, that's like, so sad to think. We put it in a barn now. You'll like it.
I mean, it kind of does work that way with this. I'm like, oh, we're outside for once. Like, yeah, like that's how simple this franchise is.
Yeah, I mean, you're definitely rearranging like deck chairs on the Titanic. The superficialness of that fix. If you are speaking to the systematic emptiness of this entire franchise by thinking, oh, Amish and Barn will fix all of this, you aren't getting what has been wrong and what is, again, maybe it's invisible to you, but I've been seeing these problems since night one of the first movie. There is nothing here. And while I was optimistic early on that the professionals were going to creep in and be able to insinuate an actual narrative, in the end, this has been seven movies of non-actors pointing at the dark and saying, be afraid, be very afraid. And here's what I can say. This one is not by any means one of the worst. Again, it has some nice image quality. The actors are superficially unoffensive. And yeah, there's this cult environment with the church and all of that. They have elements here that are more appealing than that first movie, but we're all tired of the trick, right? Like, at this point, it's just easy to turn off the camera and say, not recommend.
I admitted my bias at the top of this show that I'm just kind of burned out on the Paranormal Activity formula coming into the seventh movie. And that doesn't happen with every franchise. We did so many James Bond films, and while I saw the formula, I was still very excited by some of those last entries. But there's something about just the mediocrity and the boredom of Paranormal Activity's formula that really is beginning to be like fingernails on a chalkboard to me. The fact that you have to go, 45 minutes in each of these movies before you really start getting to anything hinting at Paranormal Activity has become very cumbersome. And so I find it very hard for me to review this movie independently and not as the seventh, really the eighth, because let's not forget Tokyo Night.
Yeah, we didn't cover it as its own thing, and I'm glad about that. But yeah, I guess it does count as an eighth film or some kind of sidequel.
Yeah, I mean, I watched it. We did a mini review on it. So this is my eighth film.
Plus you played a game.
Yes, in short succession. And so
I read a comic.
I traded you the comic for those hours I spent in that ugly VR world.
No thanks.
But trying to take all that away and just look at this movie, yeah, it's better shot, but I think, truthfully, because it tries to go for something bigger, and yet its characters are the thinnest, I feel, of any Paranormal Activity film.
There's never been characters in any of these. I don't know how you rate the thinnest.
Yeah, Margo has more going on than Katie ever did.
at least there have been relationships between characters that I could relate to and I could see the lines. Like you said, we don't even know if Chris and Margot had a relationship. I don't know if they knew the audio guy before they got there. I don't think they did, but how did they just find him? The fact is, I know you guys never understood this, but to me, the enjoyment of a Paranormal Activity film all came down to the characters. Because I have to spend an hour with these goddamn people, and if I don't enjoy the characters, I can't enjoy the movies. But if I can find something to like, if I can find humor, if I can find an interpersonal relationship to follow, then I'm at least semi-entertained until the ghosts show up.
That's what Dale does. That's what he's designed to do.
And unfortunately, Dale doesn't get enough screen time.
Are you kidding me?
I am not.
I feel like he gets the whole middle of this film.
Yeah, they give him large swaths of, like, just get on the horse. We don't know.
Yeah, put on some clothes, comb your hair like a page boy.
I remember that stuff, but I felt like there was way too much Margot with the family thing. And this really had the best hook of them all, though. We're going to an Amish village. And again, I'm intrigued by the Amish. I would have loved to have seen an Amish paradise, but we get these characters that just wander in and wander out so quickly. I wish that there had been characters in the Amish community. Maybe Margot had a best Amish friend. Maybe the funny one was one of the people in the community, you know, something there. I think of the movie that did something like this so much better, Midsommar, and how I really enjoyed those characters and how they related to people in this new community they went into. And then I look at this Paranormal Activity Next of Kin, and I'm just like, out of all of the Paranormal Activity movies, this one, I really would have to think about it if you said, would you like 90 minutes of me slowly pulling out your fingernails, or would you like to rewatch this movie?
Rewatch this movie, easy, compared to that.
Yeah, come on. Yeah, this was incredibly mediocre.
I actually think this is the worst of the series.
No.
Okay.
Followed only by Tokyo Night.
Wait, Tokyo Night is the worst?
Yeah.
Okay. Do people not remember 4? Did it just, like, leave your mind?
4 is the bottom of my list.
Yeah, it's the bottom of everyone's list.
To me, the only one you need to see is that first one.
No, you don't.
It's the raw one. It's the one that feels most honest because of its rawness. And beyond that, 2, 4, 3, 5, 6, it's all a puddle of mediocrity. I recommended some on the moment, and I didn't recommend others on the moment. But honestly, I just find them all so the same that I'm so glad we did this series so I could watch that first one and experience that fear it made me feel that still lingers in me sometimes. When I'm leaving that home theater at night, I still remember the fear I had leaving that night after watching Paranormal Activity. It made me feel things I didn't think I could feel again. But after that, I wish there was more activity or more paranormal. There's neither in these franchise, and I have to say, I hope it has died on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't going to be mine. Again, I was actually hearkened when the professional stepped in afterwards. I feel like easily, for me, the fifth one was the most entertaining, followed by 3, 2, then this one, then 6. 1's almost the bottom, and 4, I think everyone can agree that's awful.
Yeah, you say it's hard to sort through this puddle of mud, Artie. To me, it is all about the gimmick. Like, that is how, like, what gimmick did I like the most? I like that rotating camera on the oscillating fan in 3. Like, so 3 is number 1 for me. And then 5, because, yeah, that felt different. We went out of the San Diego area and got new characters. I like 6. I like that ghost camera. And I like the ooze. Like, again, it's about the gimmicks. The Next of Kin is, like, in the middle for me, because I do think there is a good ghost story, a good demon possession story here that they could have done. And then, yeah, 1, then 2, and then 4 is at the bottom. Those are the ones that really I feel like are in that, well, 3 is pretty entrenched in that Paranormal Activity gimmick. But yeah, 1, 2, and 4, those ones, I don't like their gimmicks.
What I heard you say about 1 was it left you with this intense fear, but then I also heard you say that what you like about the series the most are those great characters. Katie and Mika are not people, if they weren't having those things happen to them, I would not want to watch their household. I don't get that they were appealing characters at all.
They were the least so. But with Paranormal Activity 2 and even Paranormal Activity 4 with the boyfriend-girlfriend thing, I kind of enjoyed watching these characters like, honestly, a bad television show with the weakest of characters, but at least something there, whereas I didn't get that enjoyments out of Tokyo Night at all, and I didn't get much of it with the Ghost Dimension, and I certainly didn't out of Next of Kin. It's really, the whole ranking of the movie for me is, how well do you carry that hour you spend before you bring in the ghosts? And that's up to these thin characters.
Yeah, and you should never spend an hour before you get to the ghosts.
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah. Or, like, a shadow of a ghost, like, is not enough to hold on to it. But here's, again, I want to go back to the point that I made in my final recommend. Like, I think that there's a different way of watching things now. I definitely think that I'm old school because I'm asking for plot and composition and characterization, where we now have an entire generation of people that are like, I just like content. I just like to see people stage stunts or have their influencers say what they think. I feel like this kind of movie might be for someone much younger.
Well, it's interesting you bring that up because my girls just last week introduced me to what I'm assuming is a new genre of horror called analog horror. I don't know if you've heard about this.
No.
Mm-mm.
But it seems to be a YouTube thing right now. And it's done, they take found footage from analog sources. So not stuff they're filming themselves, but they're usually repurposing the footage. And they make the viewer the primary character. Like, they are presenting things to you. The one I watched a bunch of, I think it's called Channel 58, and it's done as like, you know, what happens on TV at like 2 a.m. And so you see like the programming, and then it gets erased, and we'll just say like blood, and then you'll get some short segment. I don't know how you make it into a film, but it scared me more than any of these Paranormal Activity films, where it's just putting you in that protagonist seat and kind of taking you on. It's still a carnival ride, but I found it a much scarier one than any of these films.
It sounds like an experimental film, and I understand that. I've never really been drawn to a lot of experimental, but a lot of good visual work has come out of experimental films that have influenced narrative films. Like, to me, it's just a hard line of, if you're really not going to care about any of that stuff, that I don't think I can care. It's really hard to watch 7 movies where nobody gave a shit about the main characters or where the ghost came from. But some people, I think, spend all day watching YouTube and watching strangers do goofy things and are fine with the novelty of watching a visual gag that they can't figure out how it was done.
So do you guys think we're going to be returning to the series ever?
I mean, how long is Now Playing going to go? Eventually, long enough timeline, we'll probably get there.
Yeah, I think everything does come back. I think that this is so easy to create.
Tell that to Friday the 13th.
But this is easier to create than Friday the 13th.
And cheaper. More important, this is cheaper to create.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And so, do I think it will come back? Yes. Can I imagine how? No. And would I want that assignment? Absolutely not.
Will you stay subscribed to Paramount Plus for the sequel to this one? Will you have your subscription that long?
Yeah. Look, to be clear, I saw the first movie and said I'm never going to watch any of them ever again, and would have lived that way had I not been on the show. Had we not made this commitment, do I regret watching them? Like I said, some of them were okay-ish. I didn't make up my recommends for the ones that I said I liked. They were amusing enough.
There's more variety than I expected.
Yeah, but none of them were that entertaining, and I don't think there's anything to carry on. I guess that's what I'm really arguing here. There's no there. There's nothing to build off of. These things are wisps of ideas that are more like Jackass than they are Poltergeist. They're just stunts. And so, yeah, some more people will come together and have doors shut and what have you, and they'll probably call it Paranormal Activity. But no, I don't think there's any future in this.
Well, then why don't we announce to our generous supporters what our future is? We always, on our last show of a donation drive, discuss what's coming up for the show. And on the main feed this year, of course, there's a ton of new releases, but I think we've got a pretty exciting spring donation drive going on.
Yeah, I was already talking about younger generations, and boy, are we hitting that. Things that I've never watched or been barely aware of them as phenomenons, but you say Harry Potter to some people, and it's like Star Wars to us. It is, I think, for millennials, maybe the most important franchise there is, and we're going to do it. In 3 weeks, we begin with the Sorcerer's Stone.
Or the Philosopher's Stone. Which is it?
Eh, right, there's that, right? I do know that much about it.
Dumb Americans not liking philosophy.
I like stoned philosophers. I don't know what you're talking about.
At any rate, 8 films, gold level, building up to our platinum level where we're actually going to get the new movie. Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them will be a threefer that starts in April. I guess there's the new movie. I don't really know how they're tied to Harry Potter other than I think Dumbledore. I know he's in the title of the new movie.
They're prequels. I've actually seen the first Fantastic Beasts film. I'm a big fan of the books. I haven't seen all the Harry Potter movies, but joining us is a big fan of the books and movies. Brock is coming back to the show for a limited engagement because he lives and breathes the Potterverse.
Oh, good. We always need an expert, and not it on that. But I'm intrigued. I have seen a few of the middle Harry Potter movies, and I remember I liked one for sure.
So, yes, all that plus the return of Top Gun, hopefully, probably, maybe.
Yeah, we'll see what Omicron does.
Yeah. How old is this movie now? It's been on the shelf for at least 3 years.
So hopefully you will join us again on the donation feed this spring and summer for all of that.
In the meantime, some patron picks, some popular requests. Sean Ray is back. He's wanting to talk slasher films. We've just had the new Scream movie. We're covering My Bloody Valentine on the main feed. Dressed to Kill. I would argue this might be the first postmodern slasher film before Scream, at least by 15 years. Brian De Palma did it first by taking, well, popular Hitchcock ideas and repurposing them to his own ends. We'll see how successful it is next Friday if you're a January patron.
Yes, and then after that, we have our February patron show, so it's a good time to become a patron 2 weeks in a row where we're adding bonus shows to that long list of patron reviews. So thank you for your support. Thank you for joining us week after week this fall and winter as we have gone through so many movies. It feels a lifetime ago that we were discussing Home Invasions.
It does. It has been a long, strange trip, and pretty rewarding. I mean, ups and downs for sure. Both the good times and the bad, you want the company to support you after you've lived through the experience. So thank you guys both for going through invaded homes and paranormal activity and not being able to talk for a while, putting blindfolds on. We've done some strange stuff.
So thank you very much, Jacob Stewart. Thank you for joining me. And now it's time to get back to the present.
Once again, thank you for supporting Now Playing, and we hope you've enjoyed this bonus movie review.
You know, I've heard of spirit photography before, but I've never actually seen it in person.
It's your support that keeps Now Playing operating.
We're so grateful that you're here. Thank you so much.
The opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the individual hosts and may not reflect the views of Venganza Media Incorporated.
This isn't, you know, Casper, the fucking friendly ghost you're chasing, man.
Venganza Media Incorporated is not affiliated with, and this podcast has not been prepared, approved, or licensed by any entity that created the film analyzed herein. All movie clips and music included in this podcast are the intellectual property of their respective copyright holders.
I think that probably was illegal in Kentucky, and other 12 states.
They are included here for the purpose of review, and no infringement is intended. Now Playing Podcast is an exclusive trademark of and may not be used without the express written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated.
A final ritual, and that's where he's going to be.
Is she sure? Then we should call the cops.
Call the cops and tell them what?
Now Playing is a Venganza Media production, copyright 2022, and no part of this show may be reproduced, repurposed, or redistributed without the written permission of Venganza Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.
Fuck this shit, I'm done.
I'm less interested. They also now got season two started. I'm less interested in that. But
what about Puck? They get Puck back?
That's season three.
I know.
If they do a season three reunion, I've Googled every once in a while, where is Puck now? And the fact that he has served jail time does not shock me.
Oh, no. That would be expected.
But if they do season three, yes, it would be very intriguing if Puck returned. But I watched way too many years of that series.
It'd be Paranormal Activity if Pedro returned. Is that the one who died?
Wow.
Too soon, Jacob. Too soon.
Yeah.
Too soon?
Not sure that plays.
How long ago did he die?
But it is telling that we're more enthusiastic about Real World than talking about this movie.
And the return of Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I haven't seen anything about that one, but Harrison Ford, part five.
Oh, wait, that got moved. That got moved a year.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Hadn't heard it.
It's part of that big shift, wasn't it?
Yeah. June
30th, 2023. Oh, shit. Okay.
I was like, Indiana Jones 5, that's great. We got a returning series that people will love. Oh, wait, that doesn't sound right. Yeah, because somebody got injured again. I think Ford got hurt again.